Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rant Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. Will the third arrest do the trick in stopping a homeless man from allegedly building a cabin at a Seattle park? No, probably not. It is still what's trending, though.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
We've been talking about this dude for a while now. For a long while. Steve Irwin. Homeless. He has been arrested now three times at Dr. Jose Rizal Park in Seattle, where police say he brings a whole bunch of equipment down to in order to build his own cabin. A cabin that has power, a washing machine, beer kegs, dude's partying, and so much more. He's done a whole lot of damage to the park. In fact, Seattle Parks and Rec say about $15,000 worth of damage that needs to be fixed, addressed. Well, apparently he was back at it again, trying to rebuild. Some people who were wandering by noticed that there was some equipment there. They realized, oh, wait, this is where that one crazy dude was the other day. And it turned out to be show friend Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle. She was there as part of a cleanup. She sent me a text, by the way, when they were doing this. And some of our listeners said, hey, I'm cleaning up because I heard about you on the Jason Rant Show, to which I told Andrea, this means I don't have to do anything now. I did my work. So stop asking me to clean up stuff. I'm not good for that. That's just not my style.
You have the moral high ground now.
Yeah, now I totally do. I'm counting this as my mitzvah for the entire month, so I don't have to do another good thing this month because I inspired people to give back. In any case, she was there. She spoke with Fox 13.
Yeah, this is the trail that is really intended to be a hiking trail. This is his home. Three times in 6 months, he's built cabins here on Seattle Parks and Recreation land and actually has now a stand back order for a year. He is not allowed to be on Seattle Parks and Recreation property at all. Sadly, keeping him here and the people that are bailing him continuously out of jail is inhumane for Steve Irwin. His mother is in touch with us. He is mentally ill in jail, maybe a little bit longer this time, and I hope so for his own good. Between a private-public collaboration between We Heart Seattle and the Unified Care Team, we will have this area cleared and restored to its intended purpose.
God bless her. She's obviously doing some really good work, and she's 100% correct. And what was curious there, she made a point that I don't think it's talked about enough, is that there are groups out there like the Northwest Bail Fund, Community Bail Fund, where they use donations to pretty much bail people out of jail based on identities. If they are homeless, if they are trans, if they are black or brown or the BIPOC community, they will release these people indiscriminately by paying for their bail. They've done this a lot. I don't know how many people who donate to these organizations, the various ones, realize what the money is going to. They're not going to cases in which someone is falsely accused. It's not going in cases to folks who made a simple mistake and just happened to have a really unfair judge. This is to get put in jail with bail in King County. That takes a lot. That takes a ton. And the higher that bail, just quadruple that, or actually, you know, multiply it by 100. And that's what you would probably get for that crime almost anywhere else but in King County. So it's already still too low. But this is what they do. They make it very, very easy for people to go out by just releasing on your own personal recognizance. So putting some form of bail on someone who's homeless, they have a real legitimate reason to do that. And yet you've got groups, and I don't know in this case it was the Northwest Community Bail Fund, but these styles of groups will release these people. And they're not doing them any favors. Do you think Steve Irwin is served right now living out on the streets? Returning to the same spot, they say, three times? There's obviously something wrong. I don't need him in jail forever, but I do need him in jail until we can figure out what specifically you're going to do about him. Now, Andrea is in touch with his family. The family has to be able to take the responsibility on. And I'm presuming that they want to. We just got to make it happen. Because I'm pretty sure they're from far out of town. But at some point, you have to at least look at this and say, okay, he's better off in jail. Seriously. If we release him again, he's going to probably go back down to the same exact spot. He's going to cause more problems. He's not healthy. At least if he's here, we can see him. We can watch him. And yet no one wants to just acknowledge that. No one wants to acknowledge that sometimes these people are better off in jail just to keep them alive. But you're not supposed to say it. Now, he was first arrested back in October of 2023. At that point, he was accused of stealing an excavator, which he used to, they say, build this. At first, I thought it kind of looked like a bunker, not necessarily a cabin, but they keep saying it's a cabin. He was then arrested, I believe, the second time. I think he got aggressive, if memory serves. So this is just a guy who shouldn't be there. The question is, at what point do we realize that? I mean, isn't it sad that we've got someone who's homeless, who is constantly just being let go back into homelessness, and no one at the city level or county level steps up and say, okay, I'm going to take control here. We're noticing this guy coming in and out multiple times. He's clearly not getting the attention he needs from people who can help. I'm committing myself to this. No case management. Just release him. Whatever. He's a man of the animals. Steve Irwin. There's a Steve Irwin on land and at sea. Well, he's dead now, but you get my point. Push the button.
What's trending? Legal.
So Donald Trump today had day one of jury selection. We expect it's going to last about 1.5, 2 weeks. At least that's what I'm hearing from legal experts. I mean, they've got, for a prospective jury, to go over 42 questions until they get that perfect jury. And you know that in New York, it's very, 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 very difficult to get someone who isn't a crazy leftist. Very difficult. So they're going to take their time. You heard at the top of the hour, Fox News point out that the judge said Donald Trump has to be there the entire time. He's supposed to go see his kid graduate. And it's kind of shady that they did not allow him to get some time off for that. They dragged all of these cases out as long as they could. They could have filed these charges years ago. They chose not to. What's an extra day, an afternoon, just to see his kid graduate? The president said this, former president said this afterwards.
So thank you very much. We had some amazing things happen today. As you know, my son has graduated from high school, and it looks like the judge will not let me go through the graduation of my son, who's worked very, very hard. He's a great student. He's very proud of the fact that he did so well. And I was looking forward for years to have graduation with his mother and father there. And it looks like the judge isn't going to allow me to escape this scam. It's a scam trial. If you read all of the legal pundits, all of the legal scholars today, there's not one that I see that said this is a case that should be brought or tried. It's a scam. It's a political witch hunt.
I have a brilliant idea that will guarantee without a shadow of a doubt that he's our next president.
Oh, yeah? Brilliant. What's that?
He should go to the graduation anyway. He 100% should defy the judge, go to the graduation. They're not putting him in jail. They're not going to put the former president in jail, period. He's going to do that. He comes off as an awesome father. And the judge, oh, he's not coming back from that. You're going to get mad at him for going to his kid's graduation, really? Now, if I'm the kid, I don't know. I might feel a little weirded out because now dad is the story instead of your own graduation. So he might be upset.
He would be anyway, though, if let's face it.
Yeah, that's true. But it would certainly be a much bigger deal. Did you know he was graduating? I thought he was already out of high school. So he's a skyscraper.
Yeah, he's like 6'7".
It's insane how tall he is. Good for him, by the way. Talk about just, oh my God. I don't even think he's done. Every single time we see new photos of him, he's somehow taller, but like 3 feet.
And he looks scarily like his dad,
too. He really does. They look identical.
It's weird.
He looks more like his dad than the other two sons.
Oh, yeah, but by a lot.
It's the hair. He's got the same face, but it's the hair that's very, very similar. Just like the shape.
They have
of
the
it.
Same nose, too. Yeah,
well, it's the face. The whole face is the same. They're related.
Yeah, that's true.
So I would do that. I would, if I were him, I think that that's just a brilliant political move. You're already saying that the judge is out of control. And by the way, the judge would be right in any other circumstance to hold someone in contempt if they just decided not to show up, even if it was for a worthy cause. But doing something at your own expense to be a good dad, God, that goes a long way. That goes a really long way. And there's not going to be a single person out there who's going to give him a hard time for that, whose voice actually matters. The hardcore leftists, of course, they would, oh, look at his lawlessness. He's thumbing his nose at the judge. Everyone else would say, you know what? We don't see the father figure in him come out very often, the kind father. And by all accounts, he's actually really loving, behind the scenes. In front of everyone, he's not loving at all. It's very awkward. Even in this conversation, it was kind of awkward because you're not used to him talking that way. But apparently, quite the opposite when there aren't cameras around, that he's a very attentive father or grandfather. And every once in a while, a photo will get released that I don't think was planned per se, but then why don't we soften him up? That would soften him up. I think that would be great. And it would only bring more attention to this particular trial, which is the one that 100%, no matter what a jury says, will be overturned on appeal. 100% this will end up being tossed, and I bet there's going to be some sanctions getting thrown around. This is so ridiculous. This particular case, you can go, we'll have disagreements on some of the other ones. This one is the worst case, which is a point that Jonathan Turley made. He's a law professor at George Washington.
Well, the more cases against Trump, the less justice we receive as a people. You know, the opponents of Trump would have been far better off with just one case, the Mar-a-Lago case. That's based on real law, real precedent. One can disagree with the interpretations, but it's not a reach in the sense of this case. This case is creating something. It's creating a criminal code just for Trump. You have a misdemeanor whose time has expired. The statute of limitations ran out, and it was revived in this rather curious way. He's effectively arguing that Trump was filing false business records through his counsel to hide a federal crime.
Except there's no federal crime, and that's the funny part. The feds had the opportunity to charge. They chose not to. Why is that? They were open about it. There wasn't a crime. There wasn't anything to actually charge. And sorry, but the optics, even amongst New Yorkers, probably is clear, specifically because of Alvin Bragg. It doesn't matter where you stand politically in New York. I've heard from people who are just sick and tired of the crime there. Kind of like in Seattle, at some point you get pushed too far. They know who Alvin Bragg is. They might loathe Donald Trump, and they might even secretly hope he's found guilty here. But they're also noting, dude, you don't go after anyone. You were going after a guy at a bodega who defended himself against someone who was going to hurt him. You went after the bodega guy. What's going on here? Man, I hate Trump as much as the next person, but can you have some stand? I legitimately think that that's there. And I don't think that that's going to change. And this being the first trial, biggest problem for the anti-Trumpers, because it's seen as the most frivolous from even ignoring what Jonathan Turley just said and the legal aspect of all. Just throw that, the legalese out. Just what he's accused of doing, no one finds objectionable, including Stormy Daniels. No one finds this objectionable. There's not a single person who's all like, you paid someone so that they wouldn't say something, kind of like what happened to me, actually, the last time I threatened to sue my law firm. They gave me a non-disclosure. Yeah, it's common. Oh my God, push the button.
What's trending? Technology.
I love stories where we could have seen this coming and actually did see this coming and spoke about it for years and years and years and years, and then finally it happens. And then people are all like, I can't believe it. I thought I was going to be a Geek Squad member for the rest of my life. No. While people were complaining about not making, at the time, $15 an hour, now it's over $20. We want $15 now. And I remember on air saying over and over and over again, you would all be much better suited for any kind of demand that you get more access to education so you can learn more skills, so you can take on more responsibilities. That would be the worthwhile cause. What's not a worthwhile cause is just asking for more money because you want it without doing anything new, without taking on any new responsibilities. In fact, you want to do less work and get paid more. You are always pushing people who are the decision makers to go down the world of automation. And now, because everything suddenly is about artificial intelligence, AI is everywhere. We've been dealing with AI for a while now. We just suddenly started to call it all AI. But there's a story today about Best Buy laying off the Geek Squad members, the field agents, because now they're shifting to an AI-integrated business model. According to the Tech Times, Best Buy is making this significant operational strategy shift. It's resulted in layoffs. And according to the newspaper or the magazine, they say it was just the latest of workforce reduction as the company looks to optimize its resources and adapt to evolving market demands. That means you're too expensive and we found something that's cheaper. And the wonderful news about AI doesn't gossip all day, doesn't check its Facebook instead of working, doesn't get sick, doesn't go on vacations, doesn't complain about working too many hours. We don't have to pay it benefits. It's infinitely better, including but from a personality standpoint, than most people who work at Best Buy. We can be honest. Best Buy workers are they're one of the worst. Anytime I've ever been in a Best Buy, there's always like five of them just huddled together talking about their weekend.
That's so true.
100% of the time. I've never gone into a Best Buy with the exception of the security right up front who gives me a look. Other than that, no one has ever been proactive and said, is there anything I can help you with? You look confused. And sometimes I'll go up to them. This was a while. I haven't been in Best Buy in a while. And I'll wait to ask a question while they're completing their conversation about the party they went to on Thursday night. Like, it's unbelievable. The Star Tribune is now reporting that they're in the middle of the restructuring. It was announced back in February, although I don't think anyone at the time even caught wind of it. I certainly didn't. Maybe it was in some industry newspapers, but I hadn't heard about this at all. They say it's aimed at stabilizing the company following months of declining sales. Best Buy in a statement said, we know better than anyone that the customer electronics industry is always changing with new technology, more innovation, and evolving customer expectations. And that means we need to make changes too. As we said during our earnings call in February, we're taking steps to make sure our resources are balanced and directed to the right strategic areas so we can drive efficiency in our business and put ourselves in the best position for the future. Again, translated, y'all are too expensive. We're not making enough money. We have to make some changes. That's it. If you find yourself in a position right now where you can easily see your job being either automated by some piece of technology or just completely replaced by AI, you need to do a better job of preparing yourself. And sometimes that just means learning a new skill that makes you a little bit more valuable. So when some of the cuts come, you're not going to be the first one. You'll ultimately get cut, but you're buying yourself some time learning some new skills, showing the people that you work with, your managers, that you're willing to take on more responsibilities, and then maybe you get into a management position. They're not always going to be saved, but it's much more secure. If you're in certain industries, you're going to see this happen faster than others. I mean, we talked about, I think, 2 weeks ago, the Just Walk Out technology from Amazon. They're changing it up. They're doing it so that as you're going around in your grocery store with your cart, you can just scan everything and put it in and pay for it at the time instead of just pulling something off of the counter and then having it just somehow automatically get deducted from your account. That technology is not just for Amazon. They are not doing this for Amazon grocery stores. They're using it there, but it's not for that. It's to license. It's to sell. It's so the next time you go into a Target, you're doing exactly that, which is handling it all yourself. And when that happens, you're going to have fewer and fewer and fewer people, human beings, in that store. And the second that they can get replaced for stocking shelves, which is technology that exists, that's being used right now in Amazon at their warehouses, they're going to go to that too. Low skilled jobs are always the most vulnerable during economic hard times. Always. They were designed to be. You're not supposed to hold those jobs forever. It's supposed to be job one or maybe job two, or maybe job one in a new industry, but your seventh job, whatever it is, it's meant to be at the bottom of the ladder. And you're supposed to work and work and work, gain more skills, and apply them to either a different job within the organization or a better job elsewhere. That's how this works. That's how it has always worked. And it has worked for generations of people. The current generation of younger workers, however, feel entitled to something way more than they deserve. Some, I think, complain in a realistic way or reasonable way to me about just the general cost of living. Totally get that. I totally get that. We played that TikTok video last week. Guy can't afford to live at all off of, what was it, $21 or $22 an hour. Depending on where he lives, yeah, that's going to be difficult. Could be easy in some places, but probably where he lives, it's not. I get why people complain about that. Hashtag Bidenomics. But that's not really what these complaints have been motivated by. It really wasn't. This whole idea, oh, I want to be able to afford a two-bedroom household. Why? You're single. What do you need two bedrooms for? I want it. Yeah, that's on you. I don't want to work so much. I want more hours to myself. I need more me time. Okay, well, the business doesn't think you're worthy of that. Go get another job then. It's all coming from just non-realistic places. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.
The Jason Rant Show.
Here to react, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rant.
And the rise of soft on crime laws and policies have made it worse.
Our man in the Pacific Northwest, Jason Rant, is on that.
You keep on bringing us these extraordinary stories from Seattle. It's amazing.
Long form.
Well, after a school in the Issaquah School District decided that they were not going to allow a pair of elementary school students to move forward with an interfaith club, the First Liberty Institute got involved, and when they get involved, that usually means we're going to get a good old lawsuit that will start to change the direction of individual districts. Joining me on the line is an attorney who is helping these two kids, Kayla Toney. Kayla, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is an interesting case in that, at least on the surface, it doesn't appear that the principal said, we don't want a religious club. It was the manner in which it was denied, but others were not denied. So take us through some of these details.
Yes, we represent Laura, a fifth grade student at Creekside Elementary School in Sammamish, Washington. And she approached her principal in February with a simple request, saying she'd like to start a prayer club where she could get together with friends from different faiths and they could do community service and pray together. And the principal said no. And the reason she gave was that clubs had already been established for the year back in October. Now, nobody knew that. Apparently, there was a meeting that was not publicized when the budget was decided on in October, as far as we can tell. But the Pride Club had been allowed to start just a week before Laura's request in February. And it's our understanding that the Marimba Club is supposed to start in a couple of weeks here toward the end of the school year. And so it just didn't seem like equal treatment. Mm-hmm. And the Constitution and the Supreme Court guarantee equal treatment for religious clubs. So if a school allows at least one non-curricular club, it could be the chess club or the choir club or really any topic, then it must allow a faith-based club as well.
Do you suspect that this was just given as an excuse to not allow for the club because of its religious characteristics?
That is what we suspect. Unfortunately, this does feel like pretty clean-cut discrimination against a faith-based club. We think especially the fact that it's open to all faiths, that it involves community service. I mean, mm-hmm. It really would be a great club for the school, and Laura's vision is to bring students together And to just be told, no, there's no possible way, was very difficult for her to hear. She was also told that she could apply to rent space as if she were an outside organization. But yeah,
how much would that cost?
Have to do that. Well, we're not sure, but she's 11 years old.
Probably can't afford it, is my guess.
Yeah, right.
Well,
right,
There's some irony in all of this, because it sounds like the reason why Laura decided to move forward with this club was so that she and other religious students could feel a little bit more welcome in the school, only to be then told, yeah, you're definitely not welcome. Sorry. Unless you want to rent the space, then we'll go ahead and allow it.
That's right. That's exactly what happened. And there's even a poster in Laura's classroom that says your voice matters, but the experience she's had makes her feel like her voice doesn't matter at all.
What was or have you had a response yet from the district? Because I know that you had written a letter to the school saying you can't do this. Did they respond?
Not yet. We sent the letter on April 9, giving them 2 weeks to respond. The school did send a newsletter to parents yesterday, you know, mentioning the significant media attention about this matter and saying that they're doing an investigation. But we don't know what that involves or, you know, what the outcome will be. So we've told them if they do not grant Laura's request by April 22nd, that we plan to go to court and, yeah, to sue if necessary to vindicate her First Amendment rights.
Do you believe that if there truly is no funding, that it might be a reasonable place for a school to say, well, we can't officially accept you the way that we otherwise would? Let's say we lived in a world in which, you know, the other clubs that you mentioned, the marimba, what was it, the marimba club, and yeah, one of the gay straight clubs, they got the remaining funds. That was them at the school level trying to be fair and just giving what they could. And now they legitimately have no more money. Would that matter as far as the law is concerned about accepting this interfaith group?
Yes and no. The law guarantees equal treatment. And so if other clubs receive funding, then religious clubs need to be able to as well. But I'm very curious about the rationale of needing funding, because it's a very well-to-do school district. If they were to run a fundraiser, I'm sure that people in the community would want to support. Laura even offered to run a fundraiser if funds were an issue, and the principal did not take her up on that. And also, all they need is an adult to supervise. And given that teachers are salaried, you would think that a teacher could, you know, stop by during the club to make sure it was going well, or even parent volunteers would be happy to help. So I'm still not convinced that that is a legitimate rationale.
Is there a staff member who has stepped forward to say that they would oversee the club?
Laura said yes.
Yeah, so then it doesn't seem like there's that big of an issue, frankly. What kind of funding was she asking for?
She wasn't asking for funding at all. That was the principal's response, saying that that was necessary. Her idea is to just gather with other students to pray, to do some community service projects. Mm-hmm. Nothing they're doing would require funds. All they need is, you know, a friendly adult who's happy to supervise.
And my guess is, because I imagine maybe someone is listening saying, well, she can still get together with whomever she wants and they can pray however they want and still do community service. But that's not really the point here. I mean, I imagine she's going to do that anyway. But the point is about the recognition and how this is a club that's just not being recognized by a public school.
That's right. And the Supreme Court has recognized that in a case called Good News Club back in 2001. Yep. They held that an elementary school had to allow a religious club because it allowed other clubs, and that it had to have all the same benefits. So, for example, if other clubs are allowed to advertise over the morning announcements, or if they're allowed to hang up a poster inviting students to their meeting, t-shirts, yearbook, you know, other forms of spreading the word, then the Christian club needs to be allowed to do that as well. And just recently, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals held in a very strong case on behalf of Fellowship of Christian Athletes. They held that a Christian club or a religious club can't be treated with hostility, or, you know, its recognition can't be revoked because of its belief. It was a very strong ruling and really helpful to students like Laura, who just want to be able to express their faith and be treated equally with other clubs.
We're talking with attorney Kayla Toney. She is representing the First Liberty Institute. They are representing two elementary school students who are going up against their school in the Issaquah School District. It's Creekside Elementary. over in Sammamish. The principal apparently said no to forming a club because deadlines had passed and budgets are depleted, and yet it would appear that two other groups were given the thumbs up in under similar circumstances, including a pride club. So moving forward, you know, I imagine you guys are ready to go in front of a judge if need be. It feels like, and you made reference to this when you first promoted this lawsuit, or at least the Institute promoted the lawsuit, pointing to the Bremerton case with Coach Joe Kennedy, who, you know, his case went all the way up to the Supreme Court of the United States, and they determined that the Bremerton School District was wrong to stop him from praying, from punishing him for praying. It feels like Washington is becoming potentially a state in which, as much as I know you guys don't want to have to go through these legal cases, is establishing for the better religious freedoms.
We hope so, yes. And I'm so glad you mentioned that case. Bremerton, as you said, is not far from Sammamish. And the subject matter is related to Coach Joe Kennedy won his right to pray. It was a long, drawn-out fight, and he would have been very happy to just continue his quiet practice of prayer if the school district had allowed for that. But they didn't, and so we fought it all the way to the Supreme Court, and we are ready here as well. We just hope that that's not necessary because the school can allow Laura and her friends to pray and to serve the community as they want. And we think, you know, certainly since an employee has the freedom to pray on the public school campus, how much more does a student? That's, you know, a very strong right, and it's protected by both the free speech clause and the free exercise clause. They work together. And so the First Amendment really provides double protection. Yeah. That's how the Supreme Court and Kennedy described it, for religious students and religious people who want to be able to speak about their faith and to pray together.
How often do you run into these kinds of cases around the country, and how often do the schools cave after you threaten litigation?
You know, that's a great question. It really depends on the school. It depends on the issue. We do find that a lot of schools are willing to do the right thing once we threaten a lawsuit. And that's why in this situation, we did send a demand letter first. We could certainly have already sued, and we are more than ready to if necessary. But our hope is that we can have a faster resolution. And that's really the goal here, because lawsuits take time. And while they can set a good precedent, our goal here is that Laura and her friends can pray. And
she might be in high school by the time.
Our hope is that they'll do the right thing.
Yeah, she might be in high school or even a graduate by the time this ends up getting figured out. And that's the, you know, the sad part of the legal system. It's just, it does take a long time. Do you get the sense that often you're dealing with schools that are acting in bad faith, or is it sometimes they're just making a mistake and they need to be, you know, reminded in a slightly more aggressive way than normal?
It's hard to say. It really does depend on the school district. And, you know, we're trying to get a sense of whether this one will be as litigious as Bremerton or whether they'll be willing to see the light sooner. And we're hopeful, but we'll have to see just how they respond.
Well, we'll certainly be keeping an eye out to see how they respond. And please, once they do respond, let us all know. I think this is an important one. And it's an important case for parents out there who maybe have kids in the Issaquah School District, or anyone in Washington State who values religious freedoms. You might want to support First Liberty. You might want to stand up and speak out, because if this happens there, it's going to happen in your kid's school district, and it's not going to end. Again, the website, by the way, firstliberty.org, firstliberty.org. We've been talking with attorney Kayla Toney. Kayla, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. When we come back, we're going to dive into some quick hits.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The quick hit.
So I think a lot is being made of a so-called viral moment from the weekend where New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu gave an interview to George Stephanopoulos over at ABC. And it's on the Sunday show. And ironically, I think it's going viral for the wrong reason. It should be going viral because George Stephanopoulos, who is a Democrat and has always been a Democrat and a former operative for the Democrats and Bill Clinton, he just doesn't understand why someone is now supporting Donald Trump who didn't support him before. And the truth is, it wouldn't matter what Chris Sununu had said in the past, which has obviously been anti-Trump. Because at the end of the day, George Stephanopoulos and others don't think anyone should be voting or supporting Donald Trump. That's their general view. They just don't understand it. They do not understand the appeal of tens of millions of Americans for Donald Trump. They just don't understand it. And it's from that elitist perspective, that lens, in which they question people like Chris Sununu, who they liked for a bit because he was basically pushing a Nikki Haley candidacy that no one actually thought was going to happen and obviously did not happen. And we all, I remember, because I interviewed Nikki Haley and Sununu, Governor Sununu, back when they were running, several weeks ago. And I was thinking the exact same thing of eventually you're going to lose this. All the polling shows that. And you're going to have to pivot to supporting Donald Trump or really risk the future of your career, politically speaking, within the RNC or within the Republican Party. And Chris Sununu is a sitting governor. He can't afford to just lose Republican support. So, of course, he's going to pivot in favor of Donald Trump. Nikki Haley is a little bit different because we don't know what her future will be, right? I mean, she hasn't given any indication that she's going to run for any other office again. Presumably, she, you know, stays as a talking head for a few years and then runs again for president after this one is done because, you know, Donald Trump is not running for another term after this next one, assuming he wins. So Chris Sununu is pushed on his prior comments and now his support of Donald Trump.
Tomorrow, that criminal trial, will your support for Donald Trump continue even if he's convicted in Manhattan?
Yeah, this trial is not going to have major political ramifications that a lot of people, I think it may have. And when it comes to these issues, people see it more as reality TV at this point. They really do. And so, whether it's a conviction or what that conviction looks like, a lot of folks, they conflate all four of these different trials that he's in. I don't think it's good that he's going to be in the court, have to be in there probably 3 days a week, for a number of weeks. That takes him off the campaign trail. He'll probably go back on the campaign trail and almost like rehash what's going on. He'll try to victimize it, and that has worked for him, right? I mean, this has been going on for over a year, and his poll numbers never seem to go down because of the issue.
And you can also, you can hear right at the end, you can hear him getting ready to push back, which is precisely what he ends up doing.
Your words were very, very clear on January 11, 2021. You said that President Trump's rhetoric and actions contributed to the insurrection. No other president in American history has contributed to an insurrection. So please explain, given the fact that you believe he contributed to an insurrection, how you can say we should have him back in the Oval Office.
It's not, because for me, it's not about him as much as it is having a Republican administration, Republican secretaries, Republican rules, a sense where states' rights comes first, individual rights comes first, parents' rights comes first. We're going to have a pro-business economy. We're not going to have a cancel culture that has really infiltrated all across America. It's not about Trump with me. It's about bringing those more.
But he will be the president.
Right? I'm the governor of the Live Free or Die State, bringing that mentality back.
That doesn't make any sense to me, Governor. I'm sorry. You're saying it's not
You're
about Trump.
Idiot.
You're saying he would be the president. And you've said he's someone who's contributed to an insurrection.
I love how he can't figure out this out. And here's the funny thing. So you've got a bunch of progressives who are complaining that Biden is contributing to a genocide, a literal genocide. And yet they will end up voting for Joe Biden. You've got folks like AOC who are supporting Joe Biden very clearly and publicly. And they're doing that not because he's their top choice. He very clearly is not. It's because they want a Democrat in power. And the Democrat who can be in power, the only one, would be Joe Biden here. And likewise, the only one who can be in power from a Republican perspective is going to be Donald Trump. That George Stephanopoulos pretends to not understand how one might have to hold their nose to vote for someone. And perhaps all of us have done that at some point with some candidate in some election, right? Or if you haven't yet, you probably will. That's just the nature of things. You know, that he pretends to not understand that is more a reflection of him than it is about Chris Sununu. There are lots of people who are going to vote for Donald Trump who don't necessarily like him as a first choice. They might have liked his policies. They might have liked life under a Trump administration. But for whatever reason, they don't like his personality. They don't like maybe perceived chaos that is associated with his administration. They don't like all the negative news coverage because it's just nonstop getting hit over the head with it. There could be all sorts of different reasons. Or simply, they really, really, really don't like Joe Biden and really, really, really don't trust Kamala Harris, who would likely become the president in this next election or post-election because of just Joe Biden's age and health. So there's, and that's a valid reason. And Sununu's reason there is totally valid. Let's say I lived in a world in which I just didn't like Donald Trump's personality and it got to the point where I couldn't even vote for him, at least as a run, during a primary. But then, bam, I lose that out. He's now the nominee. Well, I can stand him more than I can stand a life under Democrats, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, or whomever, because I know what life under Democrats means for people like me in cities like this. Like, I get it. So even if I didn't like Donald Trump, it's very easy to justify voting for him because you're getting Republicans in charge, and that means Republican rules. It means Republicans get some, you know, general control of the direction of this country. Obviously, it depends on what the Congress looks like, but having the presidency is a big deal. It creates a narrative that's easy for the entire country to follow because you've got one guy at the top pushing us in one direction. Now, I might not always like the direction he might push us, or I might have, you know, concerns with pieces of legislation or some strategies. But at the end of the day, I will agree with that way more than I would with anything coming from a radical Democrat. And this whole idea of like inciting an insurrection, just stop. The language is so dumb. It wasn't an insurrection. Not that me saying anything's going to change people like George Stephanopoulos and others of his ilk who want to pretend that there was some bloody war being waged on behalf of Donald Trump to the point where, you know, people were murdered by the mob. That did not happen. There was one person who was killed directly related to the riot, not insurrection. Usually insurrections have weapons. They usually have guns. They're usually not outnumbered by National Guards, even the guardsmen, even though they weren't actually called. I wonder why. I wonder who made that decision. But the fact of the matter is, there was one person who died, and that was a protester. Now, again, I'm not one of those people who pretends that she was some sort of martyr for the cause. Not at all. Did I think she was deserving of being shot by the officer? No, I don't. Not under that circumstance. But anyway, it continues.
So just to sum up, you would support him for president, even if he's convicted in classified documents. You support him for president, even though you believe he contributed to an insurrection. You support him for president, even though you believe he's lying about the last election. You support him for president, even if he's convicted in the Manhattan case. I just want to say the answer to that is yes, correct?
Yeah, me and 51% of America.
Governor, thanks for your time this morning.
Just so smug from George Stephanopoulos. Oh, just so we all understand. So do you think he would ever do something like that to a Democrat who has previously said that Israel is wrong, that there's a genocide being committed? Do you think he would ever push a lawmaker like that? Of course not. Of course not. Because all he's doing here is going after Trump and Republicans, which is his goal. And then two, he's just exposing how little he understands about the American people, about voters. And here's the truth. If Obama was under the exact same criminal, assault that Donald Trump finds himself in, because let's stop pretending that this wasn't all being driven by politics, the decision to charge him as many times. Let's just drop it. Everyone knows. Everyone knows. And so let's just swap him out for Barack Obama. Do you think people would all of a sudden, the people who sang songs about Donald, about Obama, the ones who cried every time Obama spoke, the true cult believers, do you think that they would change their tune and suddenly say, oh, well, I can't make it happen this time. He's been charged on a politically driven case. I can't justify the vote this time. No, of course not. They would back him in a heartbeat. They would back him in a heartbeat. And George Stephanopoulos would too. I can't believe you would vote for someone who's being charged in politically motivated cases. That's shocking to me. No, that's what you should expect. That's part of the reason why you shouldn't make politically motivated decisions to go after people in the criminal justice system, because oftentimes it blows up in your face. And Donald Trump is going to be the epitome of what it means to not go after political enemies without the huge risk of blowing up in your face. 1-800-465-8770 for your texts. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.